Tonight we're going to take a honest and accurate look at life as it is ordinarily lived by way of some photographs taken in England. So you'll always be able to think that New Zealand is different when you look at the pictures. But these pictures are universal, and I'd like you to study them very carefully, especially the facial expressions, because these pictures reveal a lot about the nature of material existence. They give you an honest vision. And in order to progress in life, we have to be honest. It's hard to see with honesty because our conditioned minds lie to us. Our conditioned minds tell us, oh, things are all right. If they're not all right now, they'll be all right. And I really don't know what I'm doing, but no one else does either, so it's okay. I had a few good times, I'll have a few good times more. So, I guess, you know, that's it. That's what it's all about. Right? Yeah, everyone says right, so I guess that's what it is. Now, those of you who come here, certainly you're not ordinary persons. Certainly, you have an interest in getting to a deeper level of life, making the deepest possible connection. That is what Krishna consciousness is about. And it is the most essential need for the human being to become Krishna conscious. Before going to these photos, let us consider the words of Lord Krishna in Bhagavad Gita. And let us reflect upon those words and remember them as we look at the pictures. And we'll discuss each picture briefly as to what we can see. You have a pointer. Okay, let's look at the translation. Now, this ancient Sanskrit text gives us extraordinary insight into how to live our life. I'll read the Sanskrit. I don't expect that you would know that. But even if you don't understand the Sanskrit, the sound vibration is so purifying. Apuryamanam achala prachistam. Samudramapa prabhasanti yadva. Tadvat kama yam pravashanti sarve sashantam apnoti nakama kami. And there you have the translation. Those of you who have Bhagavad Gita, you recognize this. A person who is not disturbed by the incessant flow of desires that enter like rivers into the ocean, which is ever being filled, but is always still, can alone achieve peace, and not the man or woman who strives to satisfy such desires. Okay, let's think about that. The incessant flow of desires. I'd like you to get a feel for that happening in your life. That desires are constantly coming to you. That's what life is all about. If you're alive, you have desires. And they're constantly coming all the time. And so you're constantly trying to fulfill them. And what about that fulfillment? It looks very promising, but things never work out the way you expect. And even when you get something good, it's only for a few moments. So you're disappointed both ways. When you get something good, you're disappointed because it's so short and temporary. And when you don't get something good, you're disappointed and frustrated. This is the problem of material existence. A wise person, a true mystical person, and you all have the capability to be a true mystic. A true mystic is someone who's not disturbed by the incessant flow of desires. In other words, a true mystic is not someone who lives in the Himalayas or lives in a cave. A true mystic is someone who knows how to manage his or her desires. Desire is the most powerful thing in your life. So if you know how to manage your desires, then you can shape your life for perfection. So this is what Lord Krishna is trying to teach us in Bhagavad Gita. How to shape our life for perfection by harnessing our desires. Sometimes people think that the solution is to kill your desires, to stop all desire. That is not possible. As long as you're alive, you must have desire. Therefore, true yoga means how to have the highest kind of desire, how to desire in perfection. So please get a picture of this in your mind. The incessant flow of desires that enter like rivers into the ocean. Although rivers are pouring into the ocean is, it never exceeds its banks, its shores, normally. So many desires may come to you due to your living in this world, but you're not disturbed by them. You know how to handle desire. You can be selective. This desire is not good. I'll ignore it. This desire is for my ultimate benefit. I'll work on that desire. Such a person can attain peace. Not the person who tries to satisfy every desire. I don't know if any of you at any stage in your life have tried to fulfill every desire as much as you could. I think everyone's gone through that phase, yes? Starting when you're a teenager, starting when you're a little kid. You want all the toys, you want all the sweets, all the candy bars, you want it all. And quickly you find out your parents can't give it all to you. Then you become a teenager, after puberty, and then you want it all. And indeed, society is telling you, yes, you're a teenager now. Now is the time for fulfilling desires. And you may go through a streak. Most do that. A streak, a wild party streak. Lasts for a few years, generally. And then you get burnt out. Yes? So, this illusion of trying to satisfy all your desires will not work. You'll destroy yourself. What does work is if you can be selective. You understand that desire is a part of life, and you know what the higher desires are and the lower desires are. The result of surrendering to the lower desires is that you become exhausted, withered, burnt out, fried, and you can see that in the face. To escape that predicament, no matter how old you are, requires spiritual education. Krishna consciousness is all about giving spiritual education, transcendental knowledge, so that you can actually manage your desires in such a way that you can even stop the cycle of repeated birth and death. Stop the wheel of birth and death. Being born, dying, being born again, dying again, being born again, dying again. This in Sanskrit is known as samsara. The wheel of repeated birth and death. Repetition, again and again and again. Someone who knows how to manage their desires can focus on their spiritual desires, and in that way, become free from the temporary material body. Even in this lifetime, this is how powerful desire management is. So I'd like you all to please consider that. How you're getting into trouble because of your desires. How you're becoming dissatisfied because of your desires. And how you can achieve the highest level of spiritual existence just through your desires. That's an unknown art. That is an unknown mystic power, desire power. Okay, we're going to look at some photos now. And please look at them honestly and put yourself in the picture. There you have it. What do you think?
What do I think?
Look at the face. It's Friday night, Saturday night fever. Can you see yourself in that? Look at, now I want you to study the facial expressions. Get the mood. There you are at a pub. This is Manchester, England. But it's a worldwide culture what you're looking at here. Can you see yourself? Look at that girl. Yes, this is it. Happiness. I wouldn't want to be anywhere else than where I am tonight. Look at the guy. The guy, he looks like he's trying. Yeah. He's not so sure of himself. The girl's really sure about herself. He's not so sure. He looks a bit too serious about it, doesn't he? Like, isn't this how you do it? Yeah. And then you see the girl behind, with the bright white teeth. Yeah, she looks like she's into it. Yeah. You see Manchester's like New Zealand's a multicultural place. Is there a pointer on this? No. Okay. So, how do I go to the next one? Sharing the sacraments together. Yes. What do you call that look on his face? That look of desire. All the men know what that's about, right? It's the wolf look. The wolf is hungry. And what does she look like? She looks quite obliging, doesn't she? She definitely doesn't look like she's impeding him in any way, is she? Look at the look on her face. Yeah. Meanwhile, she's clutching the beer bottle. That's where the security comes from, right? Isn't it so? Parties are, it's necessary to have the beer bottle in your hand in order to impart that confidence, that feeling of confidence, and you can feel spontaneous and sociable. And look at his face. He's really into it. Like, he sees his quarry for the night. All the men can remember that, right? You remember that, Matt? His wife is here. Don't answer. What about the ladies? You remember that look? What does that look mean? It means... yes. Doesn't it? Anyone will admit anything? Isn't that what that look means? Green light, right? There'll be no problem. So put yourself in that photo. It's very easy to laugh at someone else, but put yourself in that picture. That's the point. And think about the desires that went along with that mood when you were in it. Maybe it was 30 years ago, maybe 2 years ago, maybe 2 days ago. But think about the desire you were feeling. I want to enjoy. I want to be happy. I want to be desired. I want to desire. Right? And then think of the consequences. Was it the lasting happiness you were looking for? And was there no price to pay for all that? I was talking to some university students in Manchester, at the university, and these are your future leaders of society. So I asked them, they knew I was from New Zealand, so I asked them, what do you do on a Friday night? They looked at me like I was crazy. How could you ask such a question? What do we do on a Friday night? Are you from another planet? Don't you understand what to do on a Friday night? You get wasted. I said, and then how do you feel the next day? I said, oh, we feel horrible. I said, what's the use then if you feel so horrible on Saturday because of what you did Friday night? They looked at me again like I was an alien. You don't understand. Just for those few hours of happiness, it's all worth it, even though we feel like hell the next day. And then one girl who was studying to be a doctor, she kind of felt sorry for me in my naivete. She thought, so, she said, you know what the most exotic thing is? When you wake up on Saturday morning after that uproarious Friday night, you wake up on Saturday morning and someone's there next to you, and you can't remember how they got there. And then on Monday, you tell all your fellow students, and everyone laughs. Saturday morning, I woke up, and there was this guy next to me, and I didn't even know, I couldn't remember how he got there. This is the world of uncontrolled desire. It's made out to lead you to happiness, but you should know it doesn't work that way. Okay, we'll keep moving. Notice the necessary companions in terms of the beer, the cigarettes. Of course, you have to have the obligatory t-shirt, singlet, right? Look at the faces. This guy in the middle, he looks like he's getting near what you would call wasted, doesn't he? That's that kind of, yes? he looks like he's starting to not know where he is. University delight. This is what you take out those student loans for. Which in New Zealand, I know, the average woman takes 27 years to pay back her university loans. The average man, half that time, 13 or 14 years. And this is, you know, part of that experience. Look at the faces. Does it look like real happiness? What do you think? Look at the eyes, the countenance. We'll start with the couple on the left. Look at the lady. And look at the guy holding her. And think, is this the happiness that you want in life? And look at the couple over at the right there. The guy kind of looks so out of it. I don't know. He looks like he's about to, you know, pass out or something. And she's obviously eager for whatever attention she's going to get, right? Before he passes out, right? Isn't it so? I mean, you know, I'm just guessing. You have to tell me, you know. I'm just guessing. But once again, see yourself in the picture. Ladies, put yourself in the shoes of these ladies. Men, put yourself in the shoes of these men here. Is it all that it's really made out to be? Is this the heart fulfillment that you desire? And of course, you know that without the intoxication, it's very difficult to just go on like this. It's the whole thing is powered by intoxication. So you forget thinking about what is the meaning of life. And you can just indulge. An ordinary picture of a student flat. Snacking. Late night snack. Watching television, no doubt. Once again, look at the facial expressions. No idea really what to do with life. Kind of lost. Then, when you're old, you look like this. I don't say that to make fun of this lady, but I'm just saying it to point out. This is, you know, youth turns into this. Look at her face. She's been through it all. Feel compassion for her and know that most people are heading that same way. She doesn't know what's going on in life. And it looks like she's just beyond the point of thinking about it or caring about it. Her beauty is gone. No men are going to be knocking on her door. You know, she's had it. She's just passed her time. You can just look at the expression on her face. She knows there's no future in my material happiness. Do you see that on her face? I'm just going on with my life. I'm just dragging on. So that's the result. Youthful pleasures, sooner or later, bring you to this phase. And how to cope with that? Put yourself in her shoes once again. Here we go, back to a party scene. Notice the cigarette in the hand to add elegance and confidence. Maybe some of you could remember, like that, some of you men. Holding the cigarette like that, just, you know, the whiteness of the cigarette matches your shirt. And she's telling him something, obviously. Now, in that kind of party mood where everyone's intoxicated, what meaningful thing could she truly say? Nevertheless, human beings want reciprocation. They want communication. So she's trying. You can appreciate that and sympathize, I'm sure. She's trying. And he's trying too. But the illusion is they can't do any good for each other. That's the illusion. They're trying, but there's like an invisible wall between them, which is preventing them from fulfilling each other's desires. That invisible wall is thinking, I am this body. They're hoping, but it will not happen. They will not be fulfilled. This is a party. This is the father of the girl. They rented some kind of pub or something, and you know, he's giving her the first dance or something like that. Maybe some of you are old enough to have a daughter that age. And you don't know what really to say to her or how to help her. Yeah, okay, yeah, we'll rent a pub, yeah, we'll have a party for her, yeah. Let her follow her dreams. Good on her. Whatever. It's amazing how parents these days have not the slightest idea how to give any wisdom or knowledge to their children. They're not even expected to. They just tell you, follow your dream. Just be happy in your own way. Whatever. This is a great tragedy. You can see in the background, hopefully, you know, a bit of raving in the background there. Can you see? Got the hands in the air. The father's dancing with his daughter. He looks like he's dancing in a bit of a traditional way, doesn't it? But behind him are the ravers. We'll get a close-up of them later. Yes, now you see what's going on behind. The party clothes on, yes, is that what you call it? The pink thing she's wearing? Is that kind of the club outfit? Is that what it is? Look at her face. I think she thinks right now she's happy. Don't you? This is a happy moment. It's nice being with friends. No doubt about it. But if the friends have no idea who they are, where they're going, you waste a lot of time. And you can really go the opposite direction in your life. You should always associate with persons who have a deep understanding of life. Let's go. Yes. Notice the glass in the hand. You could see yourself at a pub in Wellington doing like that. Oh, yes. He knows he's happy, right? Yes. A full glass in one hand. Look at that look on his face. Nothing can touch me now. Can you remember a feeling like that? Any? Now we go to a bus scene. Look at the faces. This is after the weekend. Once the weekend of revelry is over, it's Monday morning. Look at the faces now. Look at her face. She's tired. Look at the lady behind her, tired. Look at all the people on the bus, tired. These are candid photos, by the way, taken with a very small camera by one of our staff members, Tara, who's in Auckland now. I would hope you'd feel sorry for these persons, but know that 99% of persons are like this. This is the Monday morning look. I'm trying to understand, what is she thinking, the lady in the front? Oh, I'm tired, and I don't know how long this have to go on like this. And I tried so many things on Friday and Saturday. Oh, it wasn't really as happy as I... wasn't the happiness I thought it would be. And now I've got problems, too. Then look at the girl behind her. You notice how the life seems to have been drained. According to the ancient Vedic knowledge of India, the more you engage in sensual activity, intoxication, the more your life is drained. You think you're making merry, but actually you're squandering your life's energies. So therefore on Monday morning you have that drained look. There's a metro in London. You could see yourself on the metro with your newspaper. It is not enlivening to read a newspaper. You can look at the faces of people who read the newspaper. They're not being nourished. They're not being enriched. But you have to read the newspaper because you're supposed to. And what else are you supposed to do on a metro? But read the newspaper. So you can see that's what they're doing. Someone's got a book. This is a checkout lady. I want you to study her facial expression. Suppose you had that kind of job, and some of you might. Just being a checkout lady, 8 hours like that, registering the sales. You can see she's not enlivened. She's doing what she has to do to survive. There'll be no parties for her. She's obviously past that age. She's not extremely old, but she's getting old. She's got no hopes for material enjoyment, except maybe watching television and eating at a restaurant. That's about it. Look at his face. No party days for him. This is a student flat. Now look at the expressions. They're watching television. Do you see much difference between their facial expressions and these older persons? The same empty look. Look at the eyes. Simply the bodies are going to age and get older, but the empty look won't change. I'd like you to get a feeling for that. The bodies will change, but that empty look will remain constant. That empty look of, I don't know who I am. I don't know why I'm here. I'm just trying to fulfill my desires. And I don't know why, but everyone else is doing it. Little hope in the left corner there. The man's feeling a bit of the wolfish mood and she's receptive. You can see in her eyes, she's feeling, this is good to be wanted. It's good to be desired. You get a sense of pride from that. I'm desired. Someone wants me as their sense object. And I can give it back too. You see, she's got that confidence. I can give it too. And then the girl on the right, routine. Not excited about anything much. These pictures are just showing you the basic routine of life. That's something you should think about. I have a brother who's a doctor who runs a clinic of 150 doctors. That means he's supposed to be very successful. And one day he came to me with tears in his eyes. And he said, oh, the routine. I can't take it anymore. How did you avoid it? How did you avoid it? I can't take it anymore. And he was only 35, running a clinic of 100 staff with 150 persons. Big house, you know, 2.4 children, you know, all the statistics, you know. Now look at the children. Look at the countenance, the vision. There's not much difference in that stare between the young and the old. They've got their little snackies there. Synthetic food. Junk food. And they're mechanically popping it in the mouth. It might be his mother at the... Is that another kid or is that his mother at the end there? Mother. She got a cigarette in her hand? Oh, she's eating one too. Look at the empty stare in both of them. Now look, see? The same look in the eyes. Just the body has gotten older. That's the point. Trying to see yourself in those shoes. Very soon it'll be like that. This is an honest picture. Look at the lady's face there. She looks totally bewildered and terrified almost. She's riding on a bus. Where is life taking me? Can you see her face clearly? It's quite striking. Two ladies talking it over, you know, drowning their sorrows a bit in some, with some alcohol, you know, sharing. You can just imagine what they're talking about. Why did he do that to me? After all I did for him. Material life is very absorbing. You can see that in these two persons in the front. It's like there's some energy that consumes you and leaves you with no options except a few gross and hackneyed routine options. Material energy is very powerful. Krishna says that in the Bhagavad Gita. He says, this material energy of mine is so powerful, you can't overcome it unless you take shelter of me. Is this progress? Many students together working on computers. Is the world improving because of all this? You should ask yourself that question. Shoe store, look at the lady's face in the back. She looks in pain. Shopping should make you feel good, but look at that face. These are rare moments of honesty. You can just see what she's thinking. Pain. She's feeling some pain. Something's happened in her life. Now, for those of you who are carnivorous, have you ever done that? Do the fish markets, the fish shops in New Zealand ever get that crowded like that? Look at the guy in the middle. Look at him, you know, getting close ups, get a close up look, you know. Get a close look at the flesh. Maybe you can remember doing this. Perhaps before you were a vegetarian, going to the fish or meat market and ogling the flesh. Oh, this would taste good. I wonder what that tastes like. Look at this flesh. Look at this slice of leg, slice of breast, rump steak. Quarter chop. And you forget all about that you're eating the corpse of a creature. A bus stop. Look at this lady's face. Sad. You notice the downturned mouth into a like a permanent frown. Just a down look. We can sympathize with her. Life hasn't given her what she expected, and still she has to live on. She was once a teenager, she was once in her 20s, now look. This one always grips my heart. You see that suffering? It's familiar. Someone's hurt her so deeply. Maybe it's a father who's abused her. Maybe it's some man who's totally destroyed her heart. Look at this one for a long time, because she's young. You see that pain? You all know you felt like that sometimes. What to do? Everything I've done turns out wrong. how did I get myself in this situation? I mean, she's not ugly, but yet she's feeling like life has dealt me such a blow. Where is that happiness everyone told me about? You have to look carefully at this one. This is a tryst in the back hallways of a club or a pub. You can see the man and the woman there having intimate conversation. Yes, she's got a glass in the hand. That's obligatory. Now we're back to the youthful optimism. You notice the full stock of bottles there. I was told this is the kind of party where everyone brings their own, you know, bottle and adds to the stock. Look at her face. Does she look happy? She's got her party top on. The navel is bared. But look at her face. The drink matches her top and it matches her, you know, jacket she's got on. Everything matches. Hair color, the red drink, yellow top, black jacket. But look at her face. She doesn't look happy at all. But she has to do this. She has to. This is the way you're accepted. This is the way you're happy. She's probably thinking, maybe he'll be the one tonight. He looks more interested in what he's drinking than anything else. But you can see she's kind of looking at him, half looking at him, thinking, could he be Mr. Right for the night? She's obviously not dressing like that just, you know, for nothing. She's got a reason. The hair, you notice the hair, you know, combed a certain way. But she doesn't look happy. But still, she has to fulfill her desire. She has to try. Now she's a bit more into it. I guess a few more drinks and kind of loosened her up a bit. Then it leads to that once again. Look at his. What do you think he's thinking? They've been married, no doubt, for 40 years. They were once young. They kept their marriage vows. They didn't divorce. But look at the look on his face. We give them credit for staying together, although many people now would condemn them for staying together. Why don't you just admit you hate each other? End it. Divorce. You only got a few years left. Squeeze some happiness out of life somehow. What do you get out of sticking it out when you hate each other? You're bored with each other. Look at it. He's just totally in another world from her. They're just tolerating each other. You can just see what he's thinking. Oh, what is my future? I don't know what to do. Some people resting on the bus. Oh, look at this. Another couple. She's got her big mat or whatever in her hand. And look at his expression. Is this how the love ends up? I told you it was going to be honest what we were showing you. Don't blame me. The pictures don't lie. You can't say I'm being cynical. The pictures are telling you the truth. Look at his face. long do I have to put up with her? When can I go home and watch the footy? And she's honestly seeking fulfillment through her big back or whatever it is. Look at the faces here. Just the empty look. He's young, but look at the empty look in the eyes. She's young, behind him. Look at the empty look in her eyes. Look at those faces. This is a city bus. The vacant look in the eyes. I don't know what my future is, but no one does, and who cares? Now, look at the girl behind the man in the black coat. Look at her face. So empty. So vacant. I'm sure you can remember feeling like that. No matter what you do, you're not fulfilled. Ah, now we're back at the fish market. Nice fish for dinner. Look at the boy there. Oh, I want this fish. Mommy, you get this one. Sad. Look at her face on the right. She's not old. She's still young enough to enjoy, as they say, but, oh, she's aching inside. And then look at the lady on the left. They gave their all in all to enjoy in their 20s. And now they're probably in their late 30s, maybe early 40s. They know life is going to pass them by. Looking at a bus from the outside. Look at that old lady's face. Feel sorry for her. But then, it's not much different, as I said, from the young people. Oh, very sad. These are all candid shots. You can see into the face is the index to the mind. You can see what's going on. A young one. See? Not much difference in the countenance, the look in the eyes. Simply a pretty face, young, but that same empty look as the old people. Now I hope you're getting a feel for the lack of difference between the old and the young. Everything is empty. They're watching TV. She's got her man clutching him tightly. He feels secure, resting on her mammary glands. I guess that's male heaven, huh? They're both watching television. They'll be old very soon. That bosom will collapse. Do you think what they're seeing on television is actually going to fulfill them, enlighten them, enrichen their life? No. Sad. That's it. All right. Put the last verse. I showed you these to arouse your compassion, but also to arouse your sense of self-honesty. naturally, I want you to think, how can I avoid this? I don't want my life panning out in that way. Is there some powerful energy of illusion that's mesmerizing everyone? How can I break free of this? This is the preliminary effect of Krishna consciousness, that you think, how can I break free of this illusion? I don't want to go this way. But what else is there to do? Now we take a look at this verse from the 9th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Lord Krishna speaking. Mahatmanas tumam bhata dairim prapitim ashrita pajantyananya manaso gyatra bhutaram avyayam. O son of Pritha, those who are not deluded, the great souls, are under the protection of the divine nature. They are fully engaged in devotional service because they know me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, original and inexhaustible. So there's another kind of nature, there's another energy that we can situate our life under. It doesn't have to be the illusory energy of materialism. There's a spiritual energy. Now, Bhagavad Gita will teach you that both the material energy and the spiritual energy come from the same source. They come from Krishna. And you, as the living entity, choose which energy influence you want to live under. So Krishna is talking here about the others, the true Mahatmas, the great souls. They don't live under the influence of the material energy. They situate themselves under the influence of the spiritual energy. We'll look at the purport to get some elucidation. In this verse, the description of Mahatma is clearly given. The first sign of the Mahatma is that he is already situated in the divine nature. He's not under the control of material nature. And how is this affected? That is explained in the 7th chapter. One who surrenders unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, at once becomes freed from the control of material nature. Think about that. To become freed from the control of material nature. It is material nature that frustrates your plans, pushes time upon you, pushes birth, death, disease, and old age upon you, destroys the freshness of all the things that make you happy. That's material nature. So once you can get out from under the control of material nature, then you can really make progress in your life. But where do you go to get that kind of education that will teach you how to come out from under the control of material nature? That is the qualification. One can become free from the control of material nature as soon as he surrenders his soul to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the preliminary formula. Being marginal potency, as soon as the living entity is freed from the control of material nature, he is put under the guidance of the spiritual nature. The guidance of the spiritual nature is called Daivim Prakritim, divine nature. So when one is promoted in that way, by surrendering to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one attains to the stage of great soul, Mahatma. I'd like to leave those words with you tonight. And there's no doubt some of you here in this room can definitely leave the control of material nature and take shelter of that spiritual energy. It is possible if you strive by right means. We need to understand spiritual technology, not simply material technology. We need to understand the technology that will bring us out from under the control of material nature and put us under the influence. We want to drive under the influence of the spiritual nature. That is what Krishna consciousness is all about. So, I leave you with these words, and please remember the photos that you've seen. Very striking, poignant photos giving you truthful, honest insight into life. And please put yourself in the shoes of those people you saw. Some of the expressions, some of the looks were so sorrowful. So much suffering you could see. And then you also saw some photos where there was the hope of enjoyment. Remember the wolfish men, the obliging ladies, This is not how you should spend your life. This is desire misapplied. Our desire potency should be applied for living a life of enlightenment. That is our responsibility as human beings. Not to waste our life trying to satisfy the temporary body, but to use the developed consciousness of the human form to understand what is the spirit self, what is the supreme spirit self, and the relationship between the two. So I thank you very much. Maybe someone has some questions. We have little time for some questions. Yes.
Have you reached the Mahatmana level? I'm not saying that,
You can. Yeah. You can.
Is anyone on this planet like today walking?
Yes. You can. You can. Do you want?
Yes.
Okay, you can. That's a very good question. My main purpose in presenting these photos is to not to put anyone down, but to inspire people to go to another level by taking an honest look at reality and then opting for something else. Oh, yes, you can. Everyone can. It is not so difficult. Simply there must be desire well directed. That's all. Yes?
Does Krishna consciousness have any way to reach the higher levels, or is there any other methods?
Good.
Also, material desires
You're doing some other way? Okay, well, then why not try this way? Why not? But if you're asking me, you want me to answer? If you're driving from here to Auckland, you could go one way, and it's not the only way, but there's probably the quickest way, isn't it? Isn't the desert road the quickest way? I remember when I first came to New Zealand, maybe 13 years ago, sometimes when I was leaving Wellington and driving to Auckland, I'd make a mistake. I'd miss the turn, I think, in Bulls, and I would go up through Wanganui to, not quite New Plymouth, but just on the west side of the mountains, you know. It was scenic, beautiful drive, but it was like, take you a bit longer. Or if I really didn't know what I was doing, and I wanted to go to Auckland, I would fly, to Los Angeles, and then fly back to Auckland, this is what I could do. I could fly from Wellington to Melbourne, and then Melbourne to Los Angeles, Auckland. So, we need education, we need knowledge to find out what is the most direct way, and also we need knowledge of the destination. Just like if we talk about the Supreme, where is the information about the Supreme? If I say I'm going to Melbourne, there's information about Melbourne. So if I'm going to the Supreme, if I'm going to Krishna, where's the information? That is the point. So, since you asked me, I say yes, this is the best way. It's the most direct and the way with the most knowledge because it tackles the problem of desire head on. And everyone runs away from that problem. You got some people who say, annihilate all desires, become desireless. Sounds like a cool thing to say at parties, I'm getting rid of all desire. Doesn't work. Then you've got persons who say, indulge in your every desire. Have you ever heard someone say, in order to get to the higher self, you've got to burn out the lower self? So just get into it with the lower self, and then automatically you rise to the higher self. Never happens. So, Krishna consciousness, known in Sanskrit as bhakti yoga, deals completely and honestly and fully with this whole phenomenon of desire. How to desire in perfection. How to have perfect and pure desire. Because you cannot annihilate desire. Perfect and pure desire is in relation to Krishna. The more you understand Krishna, the more you'll understand desire. Desire is the greatest puzzle, the greatest mystery.
I'm doing a little bit of a study on the soul at the moment, and in the Bhagavad Gita it says that a way of explaining the soul is if you take the end of a piece of hair and divide it 100 times, and then divide each of those parts 100 times again, that is one of those parts is the dimension of the spirit of the soul. But I thought the soul was the material.
Yes, so it's just a way of saying you can't calculate. It's a polite way of saying, forget it, you can't calculate. Thank you. Nice question. Anyone else?
But you're talking about, I'm not understood, you said that you desire in perfection.
No, desire in perfection. I-N is one word, and then perfection. To desire perfectly. Okay?
You just talked about that a bit, because I thought it was really funny.
Yes.
Oh, but I misunderstood you.
Okay. To desire in perfection. Yeah. That's a good point you made. I'll remember that. That it could come, it could easily be thought that I'm saying this. That's a good point. Mm-hmm. Anyone else felt that way? I'll remember this. Okay. Desire imperfection and desire in perfection. Very good point. I'll remember this because I speak about these things on every continent of the world, so you're the first one who's given me that help. Thank you very much. So, to desire perfectly means that you understand how to spiritually desire. The soul has perfect spiritual desires for relating to the Supreme Soul. When our desires are not in relation to the Supreme Soul, then we run into trouble, as you saw in those photos. But if we can learn how to desire the pleasure of the Supreme Soul, if we can desire to work for the pleasure of the Supreme Soul, then our desires are perfect. Just like the hand. Suppose the hand, when you're having the banquet tonight, suppose your hand has a revolution. It decides, I'm tired of picking up the food and giving it to the mouth for the pleasure of the whole body. I, the hand, want to enjoy separately. So the hand scoops up some rice and squeezes it, tries to assimilate it, tries to enjoy it. It's not going to work. The hand has to function properly in relation to the whole body. The purpose of the hand is to bring the food stuff to the mouth, and then it goes to the stomach, and the whole body becomes energized. So that is the perfect functioning of the hand. Similarly, Bhagavad Gita points out that we, as parts of Krishna, function perfectly when we work for the pleasure of Krishna. And then automatically, all the parts are satisfied. Just like when you water a tree at the root, all the branches blossom. You don't have to water each blossom individually. So it's all about understanding what is the source of everything and what is the nature of that source. The ancient Vedic knowledge of India teaches you that the supreme source of everything is fully conscious and personal. I could go on and on, but... So I think we have what next?
I think it's basically it means you've got to be grateful. this world to laziness.
And who do you thank?
Just thank for being there.
Who do you thank? You're grateful to a person.
Yeah. No. To the person I'm grateful to be alive.
To who? Who are you expressing the gratitude to?
The one I call the master of the universe.
Oh, okay. Very good. And so you need full information about that master of the universe. And then your gratitude will be significant. If you don't have much knowledge of who you're feeling grateful to, then the gratitude is not of great magnitude. The more we understand who we're grateful to, the more we can have that feeling of gratitude. So our greatest need is to have comprehensive knowledge of the source of everything. That is what Krishna consciousness is about. So I think we're going to have some more music before our banquet. Thank you for your attentiveness. Hare Krishna. Oh, I missed you. Okay. What do you mean by transcendental meditation? Those are generic words. Meditation means to focus the mind. Transcendental means above the temporary.
Yeah, what I'm trying to say is that you believe.
Krishna consciousness is transcendental meditation. See, transcendental meditation is not a brand name. It is a generic word. Okay, now listen to what I'm saying. Transcendental meditation is not a brand name like, you know, Ford or Holden. It is a generic term. Meditation means focusing the mind. Transcendental means above the temporary, above things that have a beginning and end. Transcend, above the ordinary. Okay.
I'm just saying, I learned this kind of meditation, which is about, you know, making me feel like I'm released, taking away this teaching. I'm just saying, do you believe that this, you would ever reduce it?
There's a big difference between getting rid of tension and getting beyond the temporary level of existence. So, relaxing for 20 minutes a day, doing some breathing, meditating on some sound, that's nice for physical relief. But to get to the spiritual platform, you have to strive by right means. Therefore, we follow Bhagavad Gita, which is the standard law book of spiritual culture in India. And there, how to meditate on the Supreme is described comprehensively. Otherwise, everyone's meditating. Some people meditate on a light bulb. You saw guys meditating in those photos. They're meditating on that girl. They were really focused, you know. That's a meditation. You saw the girls meditating. Yeah. It's going to be nice. That's a meditation. Meditation simply means focusing on something. Now, we have to find the best meditation. That is, finding the best meditation means finding out what is the best thing to focus upon. So it's not just that we can, you know, pay some money, get a little secret mantra. There's no secret mantras in the Vedas, actually. You don't have to pay any money. Everything is all up front. It's all spelled out in the authorized text. So we need to find out what is the topmost object of our meditation, and we should know all about that topmost object of our meditation. So I'll answer in that way. But we're getting late. I'll be glad to talk to anyone afterwards. I'll be here. I'm not going to go anywhere. We do have a schedule, though, and we have a wonderful banquet waiting, so I have to kind of move with that. Otherwise, the cane may come out and they'll yank me off. I'd like to talk, as you can see, but I don't want you to feel shortchanged. But you know, we're actually about a half hour behind schedule. We shall speak about it after. Okay?